Hey, it's Miriam, and welcome to City Girls Who Talk, a show dedicated to women navigating the hustle and bustle of city life. Each episode brings conversations with trailblazers, creative minds, and inspirational figures. They'll encourage us to embrace life fully, live healthier, connect more, and ignite our passions. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube, Spotify, and Apple podcasts so that we can continue to bring you the good stuff. Here we go. Hey, City Girls, I'm your host, Miriam, and today we're talking about the energy crisis, the human energy crisis, that is. The thing that happens to us when we notice our energy levels start to plummet, especially as women. My guest is an expert in biohacking. She's helped many Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and high-achieving leaders get healthier and stronger. Dr. Molly Maloof is a lecturer at Stanford and has written a book called The Spark Factor, where she explains and guides us on how we can charge our human batteries. I'm super excited about this conversation. So I just turned 40 a couple of years ago, and I found myself really noticing a change in my energy levels. It almost went from me being super high energy, super high productivity. I could go 16-hour days without even thinking about it, to suddenly feeling like this body isn't my own body. And so it got me really curious about what's actually happening here, because it almost feels like it happens overnight, but I know that it doesn't happen overnight. It's been years in the making. And so you, in your book, The Spark Factor, talk about our human batteries. Can you tell me a little more what our human batteries are and what's actually happening to our bodies?
Yeah. So I have been obsessed with energy for like the last decade, because I really felt like when I was trying to answer the question, what is health? What it led me to was this cellular organelle called the mitochondria. And mitochondria, plural, they're basically these teeny tiny little power plants in our cells. And they're not just making energy, and ATP is the sort of energy currency of the cell, but they're also determining, what are we going to do with this energy? Where is it going to go? They're sensing and integrating the environment. They're like little mini supercomputers that are telling us, okay, am I safe? Am I not safe? Do I make stress hormones? Do I make sex hormones? Do I need to activate the immune system? And there's so much intelligence happening outside of just the mind that we think that like our brain is responsible for all the decisions in our body, but actually our whole body is conscious. And these little tiny organelles to me are like the seat of health and consciousness. So I got obsessed because I was like, okay, finally I figured out what health is about. And there's this concept that health is the ability to adapt and self-manage in the face of adversity. But how do we adapt and self-manage in the face of adversity? If you think about yourself in a video game and there's like those little bars in the top right-hand corner that are green, that's your energy level, right? And so you know, if you're in a video game, that if your energy levels are high, you can handle a bunch of hits, right? You can get, you can have attackers, like you can bounce back. You can like fall down a cliff and get back up. Like all sorts of stuff can happen in a video game if you have energy. Same thing goes in your body in real life. If you have enough energy capacity on a cellular level, you can withstand a lot of stress and you can bounce back without getting sick. Problem is, at least in America, 92% of our population is metabolically unhealthy, which means that we are in an energy crisis, like full on stop. Like people do not have enough energy production because we have been living a modern lifestyle that is totally out of sync with the design of our genes. Our actual architecture of our bodies is still from primitive times. So we are now placed in modern life, which is super convenient. Food is available constantly. Sugar is available everywhere. Salt's in every food. There's nonstop vegetable oils. So our fuel is all screwed up. And then people are sitting all day long in front of computers, getting blue light in their face, disrupting their circadian rhythms, disconnected from people in person, and wondering, why are we so sick? Well, our bodies are not designed for this kind of lifestyle. So essentially, if you want to live a long and healthy life, you have to optimize your energy. You have to optimize your batteries. You got to make sure you have enough energy capacity to meet your demands. And there's a lot of research that suggests that health span, which is the number of years we live healthy without disease, is a product of how healthy our metabolisms are. So essentially, each cell has what's called organ reserve. And it's thought by those of us who are mitochondriacs that if our organelles in our cells are healthy and are producing enough energy, we have enough organ reserve to last longer. And the problem is that if you get chronic diseases, you basically lost 50% of your organ reserve, which means you're going to have to, if you lost 50% of your power to your house or your computer, your phone, you might even notice that there's some things that are not working, right? Like if you had 50% power to your house, a lot of stuff would start to break down. So that's the way I see the body. It's not rocket science. It's really not. And I wrote this book because fixing metabolism is not simple. It can be a challenge for a lot of people. And as women get older and our estrogen levels decline, what we see is insulin resistance develop. So a lot of women, when they get into perimenopause, the number one thing they can do to fix their symptoms is get their blood sugar in order. So that's why a lot of the book is based on blood sugar metabolism, because I wanted to teach people that if you get your blood sugar in order and you manage your stress levels, then your health will just fall into place. But these two things have to be addressed, and you can address them in different ways. And I go into many different facets of that in this book.
Yeah. One of the things I've noticed is because of that sort of perimenopausal stage, when I eat my lunch, for example, I go into a really strong sort of state of like wanting to nap and just to like stay still. So and I'm like, so overwhelming. I don't even know what's happening.
So I ate like a salad today for lunch, right? And you might want to, because everyone's always asking me, what did you eat for lunch, Molly? Like, what do you eat? How do you stay so energized? Because I'm 40 now. And interestingly, I feel younger, healthier, fitter, faster, stronger at 40 than I did at 30. Cause I was super insulin resistant when I was in my early 30s and I had no idea. I was just beginning my career. I thought, okay, I'm going to build a career on health. I wasn't healthy when I started my career. Like I actually was quite unhealthy. I was pretty sedentary. I was like committed to health, but I didn't know. I actually just like, was like, this has got to be my path, but I need to figure out how to get there. I had studied health, but I wasn't always living the example. And it took me, you know, really, it's been this last decade of my life where I've been steadily improving my health. Like you invest in a bank account, you know, compounding interest means you get richer, you know, faster because it builds upon itself. So the same thing goes with health habits. So if you notice that after lunch, you're tired, you got to look at what you're eating and you got to ask yourself, is what I'm eating inflaming my body? Am I food intolerant to something in my diet? Should I not be eating dairy? Should I not be eating wheat? Should I be eating eggs? What is it in my diet that's potentially causing inflammation that might be making me tired? Because inflammation will just zap you out. When I had gluten intolerance, I have celiac, but when I had gluten issues, when I used to eat it, I would fall asleep the moment I had a piece of bread or like, let's say it was like a special occasion. I ate like a croissant. I would be out. So food intolerances and sensitivities is one thing, because just inflammation to food will make you tired. But more importantly is blood sugar spikes and drops. So let's say you decide, I'm going to have a plate of pasta for lunch. Well, for a lot of people with insulin resistance, a plate of pasta is going to be 50 plus grams of carbs, maybe more, maybe 75. That will cause a big spike of blood sugar and a big drop. Mm-hmm. And when you spike and drop and you get that insulin surge and you get that blood sugar drop, it'll overshoot. And when that overshoot happens, then you're like, please put me to bed. I'm so tired. So this is where people really struggle, is they eat a big carb filled lunch with refined carbs in particular. So they'll have a big sandwich, a piece of pizza, they'll have a plate of pasta, or pasta salad, or maybe they're doing something really carb laden. And they're like, I can't keep my eyes open. And it's like, well, you may have eaten the wrong thing for lunch. So for me, what I had for lunch was like, I made a big salad, and I'm talking like a bowl was like filled with salad. So it's spinach, microgreens, really amazing olives, olive oil, lemon, balsamic. I put like maybe 5 gluten-free crackers in it, crunched up, some pickled peppers, some beautiful beef that I had made and that I had made out of stock, but like bone broth. And what else was in there? And, so, and like one square of like really high quality sheep's milk cheese. And I'm talking, this was a big bowl of, oh yeah, and then a beet that I had shredded and a carrot that I had shredded and a tiny little radish. So I'm talking 5 servings of vegetables in that one salad. And there's a lot of people who are like, salad is poison. You're going to die. You need to be a carnivore. I don't buy it. Salad is filled with phytonutrients. I love vegetables. It makes me feel alive. I listen to my body. My body says, feed me nutrient density. So to me, it's all about getting nutrient density and blood sugar balance. So if you get the right ratio of carbs, fats, fiber, and protein, you should have an even keel blood sugar. That meal, even though I had carbs in it, even though there was like, you know, some refined carbs, gluten-free crackers, it's going to provide me with a much steadier amount of blood sugar. I mean, I ate like a beet and a carrot, like that's carbs too. So I'm not anti-carb. I just believe that as a woman gets older, you can't eat a bowl of granola. You can't go to dinner and eat like a bowl, like the bread basket. Like those foods are going to cause you problems and you won't know it unless you put a blood sugar monitor on your body and actually see what's going on firsthand. So to me, it's always get your blood sugar right. And like, don't forget about the sugar. Don't forget about the liquid sugars. My ex-boyfriend would just feed me green juice. And I'd be like, dude, I can't drink your green juice. It's so good. It spikes my blood sugar. He's like, come on, it's just straight vegetables. And I would show him that even a glass of green juice can be problematic for a woman who has to watch her blood sugar levels. So I'm not saying don't have fun. Like I ate a cookie this week, but I ate it in four different servings. Like I didn't eat the whole cookie in one serving. So I'm not saying don't ever have any fun and don't ever eat any sugar. I don't believe in like orthorexia anymore. Like initially I was like, no carbs. Everyone needs to be so careful with refined carbs. Now I'm a lot more measured, but I do believe if you're going to eat the refined carbs, the liquid sugars, the things that you know are problematic for your blood sugar, you got to exercise after your meal. You got to walk around. You got to move that body, because if you're not moving your body after a meal that has higher carbs, it's going to spike your blood sugar. And that's really the solution. It's blood sugar balance.
I'm a big fan of walking. Like how effective is that walk after a meal? Like what's actually happening?
You are basically bypassing the need for insulin to absorb the glucose into your muscles. So when muscles are moving, you don't need insulin to bring in the glucose into the cell. This is why an after meal walk is so powerful. And it'll keep you from getting tired. Mm-hmm. Like if you're getting tired after meals, go on a 15-minute power walk and just do it. Call a friend, go on a walk. And on top of that, you can also drink a little bit of apple cider vinegar before meals. That's another way you can help balance blood sugar. My friend, the glucose goddess, she has promoted food meal order in her books. So, I mean, I eat a salad that mixed all the macros together, but if I was eating like a dinner, for example, you always eat your carbs last, you always eat your greens first, and you always eat your protein second, you know? So food order will make a difference in gastric emptying. And then there's obviously supplements you can take, but I'm just a fan of like learning what works for your body and wearing a blood sugar monitor to diagnose, do I have an issue? What are my issues? What should I be eating? And frankly, I actually started increasing my carbs pretty dramatically when I was eating a vegetarian diet for like 4 months. I lost a ton of weight on a vegetarian diet. A lot of muscle, honestly, wasn't ideal, but I was experimenting. I wanted to see what happens if I go vegetarian, and I'm not a vegetarian, just so you know. But there's this belief that you have to be paleo or carnivore to get your blood sugar in order. That's not true. If you do go the opposite direction of the nutrient spectrum, you can eat higher carbs and lower fat and actually get decent blood sugar results, but you can't mix high fat, high carb. That's how you get fat gain. That's how you get insulin problems. So you got to kind of pick your battles and not overdo the high carb, high fat foods, the chips, the pies, the pastries, the pizzas, anything with high fat, high carb. That's really the metabolic problem that's going to lead to you gaining weight and having insulin issues.
There's a lot of controversy about, you know, protein, fermented food. I don't know if you call it controversy, but, you know, a lot of different schools of thought. Your thoughts on protein?
As somebody who like spent a lot of time last year building a lot of muscle and then experimented with a vegetarian diet on a lower protein diet, I was really surprised at how much weight I lost, honestly, on a vegetarian diet. And honestly, I lost a lot of muscle. And so is that a good thing? I mean, I look at nature and I'm always asking myself, what can nature teach me about wisdom? And if you look at animals in the wintertime, they get leaner. You know, they're trying to like, now bears will get fat before winter, but the reason why they fatten up before winter is because they know they're going to eat all their fat during winter, right? Mm. They're going to hibernate. They're going to have to live the elements. So it's not unnatural for the body to go through cycles of having stronger, more muscular bodies and having leaner, you know, more lithe bodies. Like if you actually look at nature, all of nature is constantly changing every season. So I look at the body and I used to just be so across the board, like everyone needs to have higher protein diets. But I do think that it's actually probably what's healthiest is a cyclical approach to muscle growth. Because, you know, there's one camp, I'm just going to explain this sort of longevity world. There's one camp that's like the Peter Attias, the people that are all about, you know, they're all about like health span. Like, how do I look good and age well? Peter Attia, Dave Asprey. They're all about protein, right? All making sure that you just like look good, feel good, lift weights. Great. Then there's the other side, which is like the David Sinclairs and the Walter Longos. And they're all like, eat low protein, low mTOR, like don't stimulate the muscle growth pathways. Like you want to be lean for longer. Then there's Michael Greger in the middle. He's actually a bit vegan. If you actually read his book, he's really interesting. He's like, vegetarian vegan diets are fantastic for aging. However, they're not great for fertility. So it's really a question of where are you at in your life and where are you at in your health? So for me, I'm in a really good state of health. I'm strong. I'm lean. I'm not as muscular as I was last summer, but I'm not lifting as hard as I was. I'm doing mostly skiing right now. So I'm aiming for getting the right amount of protein for the right amount of movement that I'm doing. So for me, it's always been, if I'm doing a heavy athletic day, I'm going to eat more protein. So if I'm really working out hard, I'm going to go higher protein levels. If I'm not working out at all and I'm sedentary, I'm going to eat less that day. Like that's not a day where I can justify eating a pile of food because I'm not using the fuel. And then seasonally, I will go through periods of time. This is my personal belief that where I'm going to want to build muscle and I'm really going to really bulk up. And then I'm going to want to go through periods of time where I'm going to let myself lean out a little bit. And I think this is more akin to what you see in nature. And I think this constant, like I'm kind of in the middle of this world, right? There's the high protein all the time, low protein all the time. I'm like, what about cyclical? What about in and out of higher and lower protein levels? Because I feel like as you're getting older, and as you're trying to maintain muscle mass, which is really important if you want to age well, because if you get sarcopenia of aging, you're going to be really prone to falls. You're going to be prone to injuries. You're not going to have a good balance. You need proprioception, which is part of like weight training and athleticism. And if you're an athlete, if you run hard and you do an endurance exercise or you weight train and you're a serious athlete, you actually need to eat more protein when you're training a lot. But even athletes, most athletes do not train the same amount year round. They have on seasons and off seasons. So athlete on the off season is not the same as an athlete that's performing. They have different needs. So this is not the answer people want to hear, which is what should I do every day? What you should do every day is dependent on your goals, on your needs, on your age, and on your metabolism. And so like when I was in my 20s, I could eat carbs like it was no one's business. Now I'm in my 40s and I got to watch what I do with like the refined carbs and sugar. I got to be really careful with them. That being said, but I put on muscle easily. I'm very fortunate. But if you are like a naturally lean person, you're going to find it tough to put on a lot of muscle unless you eat a lot of protein. If you're a naturally mesomorph like me, middle ground, you're going to probably find it easy to gain weight and lose weight, you know, and you can put on muscle easily. Now, if you're naturally more bigger boned, you're going to find you're going to lean a little bit more lower carb and you're going to probably be able to put muscle on pretty easily. And so I like to look at a person's body, a person's environment, a person's age, a person's location, and a person's goals, and then determine what their protein needs are. I'm leaning away from it being across the board, everybody should eat 1.6 grams per kilogram. If you're over 65 and you're noticing that you're losing muscle, you definitely should be eating more protein, and you should be taking digestive enzymes. If you're an athlete, same thing. 1.6 grams per kilogram if you're over 65 or you're an athlete. If you are not an athlete, if you are generally healthy, kind of work out once in a while, you could probably get away with 1 to 1.2 grams per kilogram. If you are wanting to live forever and believe in Walter Longo and David Sinclair, go with a low protein diet, but you might notice that your immune system isn't as strong, that you have like you don't have as much muscle on your body.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like that might work for you, but it's up to what your goals are. And some people, they don't care about how they look as they age. They just want to live forever. And if that's the case, if you don't care, then maybe try, what the Longos of the world and the Sinclairs of the world are telling you to do. But personally, I want quality of life and I want to look good as I get old. And I know that that comes from healthy amounts of protein because my hair, let me tell you, when I cut out protein and I was low protein for 4 months on top of a highly stressful relationship, my hair thinned out like crazy. And what is your hair made of? Keratin. What is keratin? Protein. Yeah. So I lost a ton of hair. I had hair like yours. And now I have like one person's head of hair instead of two person's head of hair. And it was honestly like, you don't get as much nutrient density if you eat vegetarian. So you have to get your nutrient levels checked. And I was like running an experiment and I was like, wow, if you really want to lean out fast, just like eat vegetables all day long. It's great. It'll work, but you're not going to be having thick hair. You're going to have nutrient deficiencies. I was anxious constantly. Like, I really think that eating a low protein diet for me wasn't working. And so now I'm like building it back into my diet and it's feeling amazing.
Mm, really important. I mean, I think protein, I was at my hairdresser's the other day and I have a lot of baby hairs. And she's like, are you eating a lot of protein? I'm like, yes. Because I've had to really up the protein intake just because I do work out regularly. Yeah. But I tend to want to eat beef. So yeah. I just listen to my body. I'm like, I am a steak girl. That's what I want.
I ate a lot of it last year before I moved to Jackson. And now I'm really into elk. And elk is like 1% fat. So it's like one of the best proteins you can consume. I'm actually leaning towards like getting all my protein from nature. But I know that's not available for everybody because not everybody lives in a place you can hunt. But I really do believe that hunting is a great way to conserve animals that, you know, like elk, for example, and fishing. So that's kind of part of the reason why I'm living out here is like, I'm stoked about being able to have a lifestyle that enables me to eat naturally.
I'm like, your backyard is your grocery store.
I have to get an elk tag though, because you gotta get residents that if you get an elk.
Do you hunt? Are you hunting it down?
I hunted elk with my father, but I've never done like a big game before, but that's coming. So
I lived on a farm temporarily as a child for like 3 years, and my parents would force us to eat deer and elk meat. And now look at this. It's probably coming back.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the best things you can do is like try to eat wild, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Microbiome, how important is your microbiome to how you feel mentally?
Fundamental. Number one thing I optimize in every person is their gut, period. Yeah. Every single person, because I struggled with gut health. Most people struggle with gut health. A lot of people don't even know it's not normal to have gas and bloating and diarrhea and constipation. People think it's normal to burp a lot. People think it's normal to fart a lot. People think it's normal to feel your digestion. You should not feel pain in your belly when you digest food. You should not feel bloated. You should not feel gas. Like, a good digestive system is a quiet one. A lot of people just don't know what that's like because they've experienced, I mean, for so many years since I was a child, through my 20s, I endured stomach pain, chronic diarrhea, chronic constipation, all sorts of IBS, right? Mm-hmm. I had serious gluten problems. I had celiac and I had no idea. I thought it was normal. I cut it out of my diet. Magically, I start flourishing and my ADHD dramatically improves. I start having better skin. I start having better energy. It was one of the first things that I did for myself was recognize that my gut was dysfunctional. So anyone who studies functional medicine or naturopathic medicine, or even modern microbiology will know that you can do a lot of really powerful things by just changing your microbiome. So I do testing from companies like Genova Diagnostics, GI Map is another company, or also this company called Vitract, V-I-T-R-A-C-T, new company, direct to consumer, phenomenal gut test. Some people like Viome. I'm not a huge fan, but it's a decent test. Some people have gotten great results with their supplements. But fundamentally, you don't have an excuse anymore to not be able to fix your gut. Most people can obtain high quality probiotics off Amazon. Digestive enzymes, I get them from the company Bio Optimizers. Their Masszymes are like top 5 supplements I prescribe. Hugely helpful for people who struggle with digestion. A lot of people struggle with protein digestion in the gut and the stomach. So I do recommend the HCL test. It's a traditional naturopathic test of seeing if you need more hydrochloric acid in your gut. If you have GERD, try cutting out refined carbohydrates and try eating a more paleo ancestral diet and try adding HCL and digestive enzymes and see how you can improve the GERD. It can actually be cured. So I love fixing people's gut because once you fix the gut, you fix the inflammation. And when the inflammation goes down, then the fluid intolerances start to resolve. Then the leaky gut starts to get healed. I love fulvic acids, humic acids from the company Beam Minerals. You need those to heal the tight junctions in the gut, to get the gut lining to be healthy. Yeah. That'll help you avoid food intolerances. You can do that and then try to just avoid pesticides, food additives, processed foods, eat a whole food diet. I mean, it'll just change your life. I honestly don't care what people eat as long as it's real food and it's not processed. Like, just try it. Just try doing that one simple thing. Just cut out all processed food. If you look at what's in my cabinet, it's ingredients. It's not. And like the things that are processed, like kale, I have like kale chips. I have like some trail mix. I have like, what do I got in there? Maybe some Nix nuts and things. Like they're still whole foods. Mm-hmm. So I really recommend, like, if you want to get healthy and you want to have a healthy gut, just cut out the processed foods and fast foods. Just start with that. Simplest thing you can do. Super, 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 super simple. That'll help start to heal the gut, because these fake foods, the gut senses it as a foreign, and then it starts to mount an inflammatory response. And once you get an inflammatory response, then your brain gets inflamed, because leaky gut, leaky brain. I had consistently like real problems with focus, and everyone's like, and look, I'm not perfect. I still have some ADHD tendencies, but it is literally vastly different than the brain fog that I dealt with in my 20s. Like I had serious brain fog for a lot of my life, and I medicated it at the time because I thought that's what you needed to do. I believe that most ADHD can be fixed through lifestyle, and that we actually have an epidemic of poor gut health contributing to brain inflammation, which is also contributing to depression and anxiety and all sorts of brain dysfunction. So there's this really good book that I recommend reading if you have problems with your brain, which is Brain Energy by Christopher Palmer. It's basically my book, but written from the perspective of a psychiatrist. And if you read The Spark Factor and Brain Energy, you're going to be started well on your way to healing your mental health, healing your metabolism, and healing your body.
If you were going to start from scratch as a woman, say you're in your 40s, what do you do? Where do you look?
I mean, it really depends on what her goals are, but I'm guessing like the reality is that first thing is you just got to detox your life. And I would say like sleep and detoxing your life are like the first three things I would do. Is number one, if you don't sleep well, nothing's going to work. Nothing, period. Like you can't, like I fixed sleep. It was the first thing that I fixed. First thing that I optimized. Everything improves if you have good sleep. You have more energy. You can exercise faster. You can feel your better digestion. Just everything works better if your circadian rhythms and your sleep are in order. So I wear an eye mask. I do mouth tape. I have an air purifier in my room. I have clean sheets. I use grounding sheets. Life-changing. People do not realize.
I don't even know what that is. What is grounding sheet?
You put sheets on your bed that ground your body so that you're grounded into the earth, and you will sleep like you've never slept before. It's like one of the best hacks of sleep. Number two is your diet and by diet, I mean like, let's detox everything out of your life. Stop watching the news, clean out your bathroom and your kitchen and clean out all the toxic products. Go to the environmental working group. There's also an app called someone told me about this app called Yuka. You can start detoxing all the chemicals out of your food, out of your beauty products, and out of your cleaning products. Just detox all that crap out. Get rid of the garbage. And then also make sure that you have clean air, clean water. Like you got to just clean out all the garbage and then fill your body with whole foods, whole ingredients, not like processed foods, but just ingredients that are turned into meals. So the simpler the meals, the better. And then third is just you got to exercise. I was chronically fatigued when I left my residency in my late 20s, early 30s. I had a really bad viral infection. It knocked me on my butt and I couldn't even I'd work from bed. I had to start with Feldenkrais and sauna. That was all I could do to exercise. I could walk across the street to the YMCA and I did this thing called Feldenkrais, which is basically lay on the ground and very gently move your body. Then I moved on to walking to work. Then I moved on to kettlebells in my home using apps. Then I did Beachbody on demand using weights, like power blocks that I bought. Then I dated a guy who was into weight training. He taught me how to weight train. Then I started running again. Then I started cycling. Then I started going on vacations with these people that would do adventures. And they started pushing me past my edge. They were like, jump off a cliff today. I'm like, I can't do that. And they're like, yeah, you can. And then I would jump off a cliff. They taught me how to kayak. They taught me how to ice climb. They taught me how to do avalanche training. They taught me how to play. They taught me a lot about fitness that I did not know. They taught me like animal movement and beach workouts. And so the last decade of my life has been a slow, progressive increase in fitness, but it was not overnight. I did not get fit overnight. I got fit over a decade. So I was totally sedentary at the end of my 20s. And now I'm at 40 and I just did like 6 black diamonds on one of the hardest like ski mountains in the country.
Wow.
So like,
amazing. You know,
this is the secret to health. It's not an overnight thing. I don't believe in overnight changes and overnight success. I believe in slow and steady wins the race, because those habits are what carry you into your aging process as you get older.
Mm, I love it. Well, thank you, Dr. Molly. How do people find you and how do people get a hold of your book?
You can find my book on barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com. I have a lot of book deals in other countries. So, you know, search The Spark Factor on your Google and you should be able to find it. Go to my website, www.drmolly.co. Same thing on Instagram at drmolly.co. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter at Molly Malouf, MD. I do have a company on the side that's called Adamo Bioscience, and it's at livingadamo.com.
Wonderful. Thank you for coming on the show. I found it really informative and inspirational just hearing your own personal journey through 2 decades. I think a lot of women can relate. I definitely can. Thanks, Dr. Molly. Thank you for tuning in to City Girls Who Talk. Join us next time as we embark on our mission to make the city a little less lonely and empower women to live better. This show is brought to you by Better Humans Agency, JPod Creations, and Signalcast Studio.